Hello, everybody, and welcome back to New Books in German Studies. I'm Julia Stetter, your host, and today we'll be talking to Hannah Engelmeier about her new book, Der Mensch, der Affe, or in English, The Human, the Ape. It deals with anthropology and reception of Darwin in Germany 1850 to 1900. Miss Engelmeier, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure's mine. So I wonder if you could just start by telling us a bit about yourself. I mean, what and where you have studied and how you became interested in the human ape topic and whether there are certain persons that have inspired you.
Sure. Thank you very much for taking interest in my work. I studied in Berlin. I studied cultural studies and philosophy. And the book that we're talking about is my PhD thesis that actually appeared already 2 years from now. But I guess that's still somewhat new in academia. I have come across the question of the relation between humans and apes quite early on in my studies, and I already wrote my master thesis on this question, but chose a different historical outline. In my master's thesis, I dealt with how this question was treated before the rise of the evolutionary theory of Darwin. And I guess I was particularly inspired by two professors I worked very closely with, who also were my supervisors at my thesis. These are Hartmut Böhme and Thomas Macho, who are eminent figures in the research on anthropology as well as animal studies here in Germany. So, yeah.
One discussion fueled by the reception of Darwin was an argument between Rudolf Wagner and Karl Vogt. And in your book, you describe that they discussed, among other issues, about the existence of a soul and a free will. So I would be curious, could you tell us more about their confrontation and how it was typical for the time?
Yeah, sure. Vogt was a doctor and also anatomist who was trained in medicine in Gießen since the 1830s. And in 1847, he published a volume called Physiologische Briefe or Physiological Letters, and they became very famous and became the center of a heated debate, because one of the key aspects he wrote down there and were at the center of a debate concerned the relation of soul and brain, and how one brought about the other. And in one a very provocative formulation, he once claimed that the relation of the soul to the brain was like the one of urine to the bladder, and that was something that concerned many of his scientific peers. And during an annual meeting of scientists and doctors in Göttingen in 1854, there was a huge public conflict with Rudolf Wagner, who was a staunch Catholic, and who was saying that if you would accept Vogt's claims, then this would lead to the collapse of society's order, because it would diminish the power of religion in explaining the role of man in society in general. And this was exactly what Vogt had in mind. And this Materialismus Streit, as it is called, this conflict on materialism was somewhat a model conflict for the following disputes about the reception of Darwinism in Germany. So this is a quite a crucial point in, so to say, the preparation of the reception of Darwinism in Germany.
Fascinating how people were arguing and how it was developing them. And in the third chapter of your book, you analyze the so-called ape men. And one example of an ape woman you refer to is Helene Becker. Could you tell us who she was and how she appeared within the discourse about the human-ape relationship?
Yeah, Helene Becker was not so much a woman, but still a girl when she died. And she was born with microcephaly, which is a diminished brain and skull size.
So a disability, or
you would call it today a disability. People born with microcephaly feature they usually face. Special challenges also in the development of language. During the 1860s or the second half of the 19th century, that was not so widely known. And Helene Becker, who was microcephalic, was somewhat a showcase. She was brought to several anatomic theaters and scientists who wanted to study her her skull and her features. And when she died, she was dissected by a famous doctor from Munich, who was interested in doing research on this girl. The discussion on microcephaly was somehow centered on a notion called atavism, which is a condition of a human being born less developed than it's usually the case. And the opinion of contemporary research was such that microcephaly was a condition so similar to the one that ape brains were in, that it seemed to be a proof of the relationship between apes and humans, because they held forth that microcephaly was the regression of a human brain to the ape brain. And Bischoff now tried to deal with these claims, but what he mainly also focused on were the genitalia of Helena, who he tried to also similarize to the ones of apes. And this was also a very common focus, because during that time it was widely accepted to describe the particulars of a species and also of a sex by researching mainly on their genitalia. It was a very reading about Helene Becker is revealing a somewhat sad fate of a girl being born with a disability that some people found to be very ape-like. And I guess we can suspect that she didn't live a very happy life in that condition.
Yeah, a bit sad. You also analyze the appearance of these ape men in literature, and they also appear in Wilhelm Raabe's The Birdsong Papers. And Which status do ape men have there, and how does it differ from other discourses?
Well, at first it should be noted that the ape man appearing in Wilhelm Raabe's The Birdsong papers is not a microcephalic person as Helene Becker that we just talked about, but someone who is made up as an ape. So someone wearing a costume, more or less, and who's part of a circus, who's coming to the town where the Raabe novel is set. I don't think that this figure differs too much from other ape men or ape-like figures in literature. It's just that in Raabe, we find a certain aspect highlighted that is also quite common, and that is the role of the ape man or the ape as an outsider. And in this case, this outsider is appearing at a crucial point of disorder in a former bourgeois setting of a small town, and the figure also mirrors the role of a protagonist's responsibility for the collapse of the small town's orderly life. And this is somewhat also a mirror or a metaphor, you might say, for the collapse of the order of the animal kingdom, from the point on that you could more or less prove that man also was stemming from apes, as was proposed by Darwin in 1859, or not proposed but rather hinted at. Yeah.
Interesting. Fine. Also famous in the human ape discourse is, of course, Ernst Haeckel. I suppose everybody has heard about him. So could you tell us a bit more about his key assumptions and then describe why he became so popular?
Sure. Let me start with that. I think at least in Germany, more people learned from Haeckel about Darwin's ideas than from Darwin himself. It's quite likely that more people read Haeckel than Darwin, and this is probably mainly due to Haeckel's potential as an artist. Many people know his famous illustrations in his books. He was a wonderful painter, or made wonderful drawings that illustrated his findings, and also he was a very gifted speaker and gave famous public lectures that drew many people to his talks that were popularizing science. Meaning in this case that he was aestheticizing science as well as his key concept, or his key Weltanschauung, as we would say in German, which is monism. Meaning that Haeckel wished to suspend the former conviction of a boundary between so-called living and dead matter, or also of animals and humans. And the relationship, or the question of the relationship between apes and humans, is somewhat a model case for his assumptions, showing that all living organisms stem from one single origin. Yet this doesn't mean that he suspended the hierarchies between different species or organism. To the contrary, Haeckel is also very famous for his family trees, and one that is also at the center of my book is the picture of a huge tree, maybe a German oak or so. This picture stems from his work Anthropogenie from 1874. And on this oak, or the branches of the oak, he posited the names of different families of apes, and he posited man on the top, just over the gorilla and the orangutan, and to create a very potent image and a very as he might have said, evidence or proof of the hierarchy of man-like creatures. And that was very important for him to stick to the central role of the human in all the creation, that what he still talked about. So his teachings were still drenched in a more or less quasi religious ideas, and he also tried to establish his monism as a kind of scientific religion. And we have to think of his anthropology as part of this endeavor.
And in your book, you have also included many pictures, and I did like that a lot, these pictures. And that's nice. So, all right, one last question. Looking back at the results of your book, is it possible to say how the anthropology of humans is connected with apes? And do you find topics that would be worth further investigation?
Well, sure, there are. My work has a historical approach, and looking at the history of anthropology, it is quite clear that it wouldn't have come about hadn't there been research on the history of apes. And I would also say that there's not only an anthropology of humans, but an anthropology of apes that is part of this history. And we can still today see that there is an ongoing fascination regarding these relations. For example, in 2015 there was a large exhibition called Ape Culture at Berlin's Haus der Kulturen der Welt, and there was a range of topics, including animal testing, where apes are used to research on any kind of substances, and still apes are model beings to research on how apes and humans build their families and communities. Also, there's research on language acquisition and such. And all these aspects could be the topic of further research from the history of sciences.
Oh, okay.
So there's still a lot of work to do, and there's also ongoing researchers, research by many fine researchers throughout Germany and also in other places.
Oh, I see. Okay, Ms. Engelmeier, I really appreciate you taking the time talking to me today, and I really enjoyed reading your book.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a ton for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Sure.